In the opulent bathroom of his rectory, Archbishop Richard Rushman hums Beethoven's Ode to Joy, conducting an imaginary orchestra as steam clouds the mirror. The saint of Lakeview Drive, beloved for his work with homeless youth, has no idea these are his final moments. Downstairs, an intruder drinks chocolate milk directly from the carton, leaving telltale droplets on the pristine floor before selecting an ornate carving knife, a Vatican gift bearing the papal seal. Minutes later, the Archbishop's cream-colored walls become a crimson gallery of horror in an attack so savage it suggests something deeply personal, almost ritualistic. When attorney Martin Vail, feared legal predator known for destroying prosecutors without mercy, is appointed to defend the suspect, he finds himself staring into the angelic face of 19-year-old Aaron Stampler. With cream-colored skin, gentle blue eyes, as gentle as those of a fawn, and a soft Appalachian accent, Aaron seems incapable of such brutality. Yet, he was caught red-handed with the murder weapon and the bishop's ring. "I didn't kill him," Aaron insists in his high-pitched voice. "I was there when it happened. I panicked." What begins as a seemingly open and shut case will soon unravel into something far more sinister, a labyrinth of deception where innocence becomes the most convincing disguise of all. In Judge Schott's chambers, Vail receives an unwanted pro bono assignment, defending Aaron Stampler. The judge reveals his bias, "We're going to try him anyway," and demands a rushed timeline despite public outrage. Outside, power broker Roy Shaughnessy suggests this hopeless case could legitimize Vail's career despite the inevitable conviction. Meanwhile, prosecutor Jane Venable is assigned by DA Yancey to handle the Rushman case before leaving for her new job. "We want this guy charbroiled," Yancey insists. When Venable learns Martin Vail represents Stampler, she's stunned. Having faced him twice before, once ending in mistrial, once in disaster when Vail dismantled her case, she vows, "I owe the son of a bitch one." Vail assembles his team, investigator Tommy Goodman, legal expert Jack Spaulding, secretary Naomi Chance, and psychiatrist Dr. Molly Arrington for a legal battle that will expose humanity's darkest corners. Have you ever wondered how easily we accept people's public masks? What happens when those masks slip, revealing something monstrous beneath? When Vail visits Aaron's cell, he's struck by the contrast between the brutal crime and this slight young man with an angelic face. Using his recent $7.6 million victory as leverage, Vail secures better conditions for Aaron. The boy speaks innocently about coming from Crickside, Kentucky, meeting Bishop Richard through Billy Jordan, and living at Savior House before moving in with his girlfriend. Investigation reveals Aaron's complexity, a genius-level intellect who read Shakespeare and Freud yet ended up homeless. In Crickside, Dr. Koswalski recalls Aaron watching autopsies unflinchingly. His former teacher, Rebecca, discloses they'd been lovers since he was 14. During psychiatric evaluation, Dr. Molly Arrington witnesses a transformation. Aaron's features harden, his voice becoming a sibilant whisper. This new personality, Roy, physically threatens Molly, grabbing her throat. Unlike timid Aaron, whom Roy calls Sonny, Roy is aggressive and claims responsibility for the bishop's execution. When Aaron returns, he has no memory of the encounter. Naomi traces Rushman's phone number to the Bernstein Clinic, discovering that Linda Gellerman, Aaron's girlfriend, is pregnant with the bishop arranging an abortion. In an alley, Goodman learns from Alex the horrifying truth: Bishop Rushman had been making pornographic videos with altar boys. Aaron, Alex, Billy, Peter, and Linda were all victims in his sexual exploitation, which he called getting rid of the devil. Aaron had planned to steal an incriminating tape showing Linda. Goodman finds a tape labeled Altar Boys, 2983, in the bishop's apartment. The defense team debates using this evidence, with Vail concerned it could backfire, making Aaron look worse while protecting the bishop's reputation. Our job is to save Aaron's life, not expose the truth about the bishop, Vale insists. Later, two altar boys are murdered at the Wingate shelter in the same pattern as the bishop. The team also deciphers B32.156, a reference to the scarlet letter about the impossibility of maintaining two faces without losing one's true self. As the trial begins, Vale challenges the jury to consider Aaron's motivation and mental state. Prosecutor Venable's witness, Dr. Bascott, testifies that Aaron is quite normal, with genius-level intelligence. During cross-examination, Vale establishes that schizophrenia often stems from religious and sexual disorientation, and that fugue states, Aaron's claim of blacking out during the murder, are legitimate psychological phenomena triggered by trauma. After character witnesses praise Bishop Rushman, Lieutenant Stenner testifies about Aaron's premeditation. Vale forces him to admit he never thoroughly investigated for a third person and can't explain unidentified fibers at the scene. In a shocking move, Vale calls Aaron to testify about his fugue states where he'd suddenly find himself somewhere with no memory of how he got there. During Venable's cross-examination, Aaron transforms, his face contorting with hatred, posture changing, and accent vanishing. With an animal-like growl, he attacks Venable, grabbing her hair and threatening her life before being restrained. The courtroom sits stunned. Has justice been served or manipulated? In Judge Schott's chambers, Vale reveals that Aaron suffers from dissociative multiple personality disorder, explaining that Aaron's alternate personality, Roy, commits psychopathic acts without Aaron's awareness. After viewing tapes of Aaron switching personalities, Venable realizes she can't request a mistrial since she triggered Roy's appearance. Vale offers a deal. Aaron pleads guilty but insane with institutionalization until cured, and they won't expose Bishop Rushman's pedophilia. The courtroom is stunned when Venable accepts Aaron's guilty but insane plea, which Judge Schott immediately approves. Later, alone with Aaron, Vale witnesses a transformation as Aaron's Appalachian accent vanishes. He reveals he can switch personalities at will. He's been manipulating everyone all along. I studied up on multiple personality at the library, he explains calmly. I knew just how to act. When Vale asks if there never was a Roy, Aaron leaves him with a chilling thought. Suppose there never was an Aaron. His haunting laughter echoes down the hall. Aaron Stampler's case exposes uncomfortable truths about human nature. The bishop concealed abuse behind piety. Aaron hid murderous intent behind innocence, and the justice system failed to distinguish truth from performance. We all wear different personas depending on our audience, but how deep do these masks go? When does skilled deception become self-deception? What's most disturbing about Aaron isn't just his deception, it's that his performance was convincing because it contained truth. His trauma and the bishop's abuse were real. He only fabricated his lack of control. When you feel certain you know someone, remember Aaron's angelic face and gentle manner. Remember how readily we accept performances that confirm our expectations. Consider which of your own masks has become so comfortable you've forgotten it exists. In a world of universal masking, true justice may be impossible, for how can we judge what we cannot truly see?